M34, number 3B.
In the chapter, Some Objections Answered, I epitomized it and said, wrong notions about mind originate in superstitions. Now she takes the worldly mind, because we are in Christianity, in the focal point of the universe, and says, now the counterfeit of that ideational universe is that human sense, the human mind's point of view of the universe, but says, all these human mind concepts, wrong notions about mind, they are not coming from mind. They originate in superstitions, and so reject the objections towards mind. See, the objection towards mind there is, well, that's quite all right that there is a divine mind, but we have also a mind. People have a mind of their own. People can think the way they think. And are now these thoughts of human beliefs, are they now also manifestations of the divine mind? And so here she corrects it and shows here at the point of Christianity, at that very focal point again, that all human beliefs or all human minds have nothing to do with the divine mind, that they are not the manifestation of the divine mind. Because you know how people say, well, I had a very nice thought. And if they say, I had a very nice thought, they inwardly acknowledge to themselves, it came from God. But that is not always the case. It can be just a nice intuition, it can be their own wishful thinking, it can be their own ephemeral thinking, it can be all sorts of things which the human mind likes. So here she shows that that which originates somewhere else than in the divine mind cannot be considered as mind, has no place in the one mind, is not a manifestation of the divine mind. Then we come to the chapter on Christian Science Practice. You know, always when you come to these big chapters, Christian Science Practice has how many pages? Nearly 80 pages, round about. Well, and Christian Science Practice has perhaps 100 statements on mind, because it's full of mind and mind and mind. It's a bit difficult to reduce it and to reduce it to what it really means. And the focal point which seems to be there is that in the divine mind there is no human belief nor disease. See, can you hear at once the touch of Christian Science Practice? Can you see at once the Christianity sense which says, but is there in anything, in a disease, in a body, is there a human belief? Is there mind in disease? Is there mind in the body? And so she always has to stress that in the divine mind there is no human belief and therefore no disease. Always she goes out in that chapter, whatever the belief is, and says it's mortal mind, and in place of mortal mind we must see that the divine mind knows no disease, that the divine mind produces no human belief and therefore no disease, the divine mind manifests no human belief and therefore no disease, that the divine mind just does not know. That it just does not include. You see, we are at the point of science here, where again we have the oneness where it says, well, if there is divine mind, then there can't be a human mind. There can't be a mortal mind. See, if only this would be understood in the practice. Because in the practice, you know very well, a lot of practitioners, perhaps the greatest percentage of the practitioners, they just take the patient through the third degree and say, now, what have you been thinking? Oh, you have been thinking that way. Well, naturally, that is erroneous. Now, you shouldn't think that way. In other words, they admit that wrong thinking or human thinking has power, is something, is an illness. Whereas here, the whole chapter is all about that human thinking, whatever it is, good or evil, isn't anything. That the divine mind just does not have such a human thinking, does not know such a human thought, but that only the divine mind reigns and governs. That the one mind is all, and therefore has no human belief in itself. Can you see how what is meant by, you see, that the divine mind, if it takes its all, you see, that the divine mind has in itself not another all, not another thought, that it does not know other thoughts, other beliefs, evil thinking, good thinking, human thinking, and so on. Just doesn't know. The divine mind is in all, and therefore, at the point of science, says, I am the only mind, and as the only mind, I don't know any other mind, any other universe of thinking. You know how people are afraid of their own wrong thoughts, and of the wrong thoughts of others? Gosh, they are afraid, huh? The neighbor is thinking wrong about me, he malpractices me, and this is wrong, and that thinks wrong about me, and he doesn't look at me in the right way, and... Well, they are terrified about wrong thinking, because they don't know that the mind is one, and that in the one mind there is no wrong thinking. That brain can go on and on like a computer making wrong calculations as long as it wants. It doesn't do anything to the divine mind. It doesn't do anything to the divine mind. But we must see that. First, you see, down in footsteps of truth inside, we must understand mind, and then down in the Christianity, in the practice of Christian Science, we must really see that therefore when we understand the divine mind, that we have no human belief to deal with. Instead of fighting like hell against human beliefs, making only a duality, stating there is a divine mind and stating there is a universe of human beliefs, of mortal minds, of a lot of human minds, 3 billions of human minds, and they all are thinking wrong, and therefore the world goes so wrong. As if there were not a mind which is one, and therefore accepts and knows no other mind. Yes, let's go to the next one. Column, the last column of science. I try to epitomize this, that the one mind is what? Mind and its idea. See, what have we always said when we come to science? At science, everything is always resolved. The world, the Christ, Christianity, taken together as being, where principle and idea is one. Where therefore mind and its idea is one. Where we are now no more just considering God as mind, and then seeing that God as the Christ manifests that mind somehow, and then in Christianity that manifestation is showing forth in infinite ideas of mind. Now it comes back in science, it includes them no more as a process but as being, which says there's only one mind, and that one mind is mind and idea. It's no more like in the world where we just say mind is all, capitalized, but where we see that mind is mind and idea. principle and idea, but as one. The chapter on teaching shows only by accepting one mind can mind be demonstrated successfully. See, now we have the one mind. Teaching, the chapter on teaching is always that, you would be able to remember, but it's asking much too much, what we have always seen in that tone of science as the word. We have always seen the chapter on teaching is always that which leads you to accepting the oneness of being. Shows always what has to be done to accept that being is one. Then, when that is accepted, then comes recapitulation. All there is mind and mind's ideas. You know, you have the Christ as science. The Christ as science is not the Savior. The Christ as science is an interpreter. That's the Christ in science. That mind says, I'm not going just to be mind, I'm also going to interpret myself as what I am. See, it's the oneness of mind which says, I'm not going to stay just mind, which is a concept like, a morphic concept. Just
anthropomorphic.
Wow. I must find another word. Huh? That's very easy. Huh? It's not just one block.
Amorphous mass.
Amorphous mass, that's it. It's not just an amorphous mass which is called mind. But mind says, I'm infinite mind. Therefore, I express myself as infinite mind, and I can only do that through my ideas. That's why recapitulation, the chapter on recapitulation, is that chapter which always expounds the principle of being. Just shows it up and shows the scientific metaphysics of that mind. So that mind to us as a Christ is something which is not just one block, one amorphic whole, but is infinitely interpreted. And yet is one. Just like saying, you see, it is like saying this. If a student in arithmetic would come along and always say for 40 and 50 years as he is living, there is only one mathematics, you know? You know, there is only one mathematics. Oh yes, there is only one mathematics. Can you calculate? No. Is he right? Yes. There is only one mathematics. But he doesn't do a thing. Because for him, he just states the word, there is one mathematics, and it's true, but it's not interpreted. It has no Christ in it. The statement, there is one mathematics, has no Christ in it. Only then, when we go and interpret that mathematics and see it in its categories and its laws and its order and its classification and so on, that one mathematics is interpreting itself and it remains the same one mathematics. It isn't split up. And the same is about mind. We go around and say, yes, God is mind and mind is all, there is only one mind. Wonderful, it's true. But it doesn't do a thing, because that's only a statement as we had it in the word. In the science chapter, she comes and says, this one mind must be explained through its ideas. You know that wonderful statement, for instance, in the recapitulation. There are many others in this way, where she says, reasoning from cause to effect, we begin with mind, which must be understood through the idea which characterizes it. It must be understood through the idea. Giving a sense, mind is only then a science of mind when it expounds itself, interprets itself. explains itself. And this is what we mostly find in recapitulation, this expounding of mind. Then in Genesis, we have mind's evolution is an evolution of ordered idea. Can you see now, again, what we had in Genesis before, that creation, she says, is an emanation within its infinite self-containment. Here she shows, yes, within that one mind which explains itself as ideas, goes on in Genesis a constant evolution, a constant evolution. Mind is constantly coming in an ordered way to everyone, but never leaving mind, always within the one mind. Terrific. Terrific. Because, don't we, most of us, have a sense there is somewhere a divine mind that comes to us and leads us, takes us by the hand and leads us somewhere. Where somewhere? Do we have a feeling that we are that very mind itself? That we are never be led anywhere, but that it is within that infinite self-containment, and therefore all what we witness really as evolution, as creation, is nothing else but that the infinite withinness does always structure itself differently and anew. Do you know what the sentence I have said? I've said one of the biggest sentences of today, of the world of today. Because the world of today sees that there is no creation. That neither in physics, nor in biology, nor anywhere, nor in evolution, there is a creation. All there is going on, that within the infinite withinness, there is a constant new structuring of its component parts, and that's creation. Can you see that? I would like to see you to see that, you see. Take the, perhaps a simple example, the numeration table. 1 to 10, up and down. 1 times 1, 1 times 3, 1 times 4, and so on. 2 times 1, 2 times 2, 2 times 3, 2 times 4. The whole numeration table. If you look at it at that matrix, so to say, of 1 to 10 in its combination, it is, so to say, a structure which doesn't change when you bring the various points in relation to each other. All what you do is to change its structure, but not the amount of numbers you have, not the amount of the framework you have. Golly, did I say that right? Can you see that creation is not the coming to being of something new? Because in being, nothing can be new. That's what Mrs. Eddy says. Nothing can be novel to the infinite mind, she says in Genesis. So what then is that new, which we experience as new? It's only that the structure within that infinite one is constantly moving and therefore constantly bringing forth new point of intersections. That's all that happens. And that's what Genesis shows. The first record of Genesis just shows that the infinite has no beginning, she says. That the infinite does not start. Is this the creation, she said? No, it isn't the creation, it is a revelation. Then he goes on and says, what is this revelation? Well, it's a constantly changing of the component parts into new concepts. But being cannot bring forth something new. Being can only always, because it's dynamic, arrange itself anew. Let's say a new arrangement within itself. Like we had with the telescope, with the kaleidoscope, it's only a new arrangement of its parts so that it brings forth new forms, and in this way we call that creation, but only we call that creation. Therefore, everything is already complete. And this is what she wants to show here, that mind's evolution is an evolution of ordered idea, but always within the whole. Always within the whole. Therefore, we can sit back, you see now, quiet hours, and see that actually nothing new has to come. All what is happening is that mind itself, in its infinitude, is always showing itself as new arrangements of itself, new arrangement of its own ideas. That's all what happens. A discovery in the field of in any field is not something which is not a new, how we call it, is not really a creation, but it's just finding out another arrangement. Just finding out another arrangement. Like Kimball had always taught that famous thing that he said, if Adam had known enough, he could have a piano. See? Because at that time, all the ideas necessary, or all the things necessary to construct a piano, were already in existence. But because Adam couldn't yet arrange all this idea into the focal point of a piano, he didn't have a piano. So there isn't really a creation. There is just a genesis, or we may call it a rearrangement, a rearrangement, a rearrangement of structure. What have we been doing with all these matrices these last 2 days? They were always the 4 times 4. But we are always rearranging them. We are always putting a stress on something else. And so we are reconstructionaling. See, to put the structure in new combination. And then we had a completely different thing. But actually it was always the 4 times 4. Nothing more. And that's what Genesis wants to show. That there is this great motherhood sense, this great matrix of immortality within, evolves constantly that rearrangement, rearrangement, rearrangement of all that is already there. That's mind, including its own ideas. You know, quiet hours in the winter are wonderful. Long winter nights. To sit back and just think about them. Just think about them quietly. And then they come. Because mind is not outside of us. Mind and mind's ideas are one. And so because they are one, and because mind in Genesis rearranges itself constantly, it comes to us as new ideas, as new revelation. But it's only mind doing a new rearrangement of its own ideas. Therefore, the importance of seeing ideas. Then we come to the Apocalypse, where we see that mind knows the isness of mind and the illusion of mortal mind. Again, the climax. Here, mind knows what it knows, and therefore knows that everything else is not mind. And that's the climax as she gives it. All right. Well, I wish you would afterwards destroy this and just put it away and say, I'm not going to make this sacrosanct. Can you say sacrosanct? Yes. But I have seen that the textbook gives me a way to build up, to form within me a dynamic, an operational sense of mind, whatever its synonymous term. So just the way I have given you here the mind matrix, naturally, we could do the same with any other synonymous term, you see? We could go through the whole textbook with the term spirit,
and see what spirit means in the chapter on prayer, what it means in the chapter on atonement and Eucharist, what it means in the chapter on marriage, and so on, and could build a spirit matrix of the textbook. And so with soul, and so with principle, and so with life, and truth, and love. But the only thing really which should stay in your mind is not each of these things, because that would be memorizing it. It's just the tone, and little by little it just flows to your thought easily. But the interesting thing I would like you to keep in mind is this, that each chapter uses a synonymous term for a different office. That it isn't so, as we may have believed, that those synonymous terms all over the textbook are used again and again in the same way, but that they have identity. That the synonymous terms have identity in each of these 16 chapters, and each time a new and a different one. And actually always differentiation is that which builds up in consciousness the structure of a subject. Yes. All right. Is that clear? Now, I said in the same way as we do that with mind, actually we could do that with any other synonymous term. But not only that. Sometimes we are interested in some fundamental problem, which must not be a synonymous term, but can be any subject, any fundamental subject. For instance, everybody is always interested to know what is matter, or what is mortal mind. And up to now, you know, these questions, what is mortal mind, these fundamental questions, what is matter, what is sin, you see, what is death, or so, they have always been answered more or less with one statement, with one answer. One has either said, well, matter is a misunderstanding of spirit. Or one has said, mortal mind is nothing. Something like that. And you know that the whole class teaching and the whole discussion really among Christian Scientists over all the last 100 years went around such fundamental questions. What is matter? It's a great question, even for the physicist. For the physicist, it's a great question, what is matter? Actually, today they don't know what it is. They only know one thing, that it isn't only one thing, but that matter is a structure. A structure, not a structure of atoms or electrons, but the structure of completely different categories. The categories of tangibility, the category of hardness, the category of mass, the category of gravitation, the category of, I don't know what, I'm not a physicist. But all those various categories together are matter. Can you see what happens today? And this is happening in chemistry, this is happening in biology, this is happening all over, that one leaves the attempt to define these fundamental concepts through one answer, and begins to see that every one of these fundamental concepts are whole structures. You know what I mean? Just the same what we have been saying. We were saying, well, what is mind? And we couldn't say, well, mind is all. Or the other one said, well, dear, mind is love. But all these things are true. But they are no answer. See, they are no answer. They must be answered through a whole structure. And only through a whole structure we get to know, or we get the answer, what is mind. The same thing is, you know that very well, I don't know if you get so often cross at Mrs. Eddy as I did in earlier years. As a student, and I want to have, where we are used to have textbooks, and in that textbook clear definitions, and defining exactly what the terms mean. Well, here in the textbook of Christian Science, you have these terms like Christ. And then you want to say, well, what is Christ? And you go through the textbook, and you see that there are about 200 passages on the Christ, and each one says something different. And you ask yourself, is this woman sane? Let's be down to earth, you see.